All right, it is that time again. Common Sense Ohio. I missed it last week. I just felt like everything was off. I felt like nothing made sense.
And the weather was spectacular.
There was just no sense in the world. If you felt that way too, it's because you didn't get your weekly dose of common sense. But we're back. June 26, 2026. Interestingly, you know, it's funny. History is a funny teacher, you know?
Yeah.
And 2 years ago today, the Dobbs decision. It's been that long.
Right.
Dobbs basically eliminating the fictitious constitutional right to get an abortion.
Right, right. The penumbra.
The penumbra, right. Do the math or do the research. Look.
Yeah. You know. Even liberal legal scholars like Ruth Bader Ginsburg knew it was complete bullshit.
Yeah. Roe was an inventor. Anyway, that was 2 years ago today. But in the Cold War, going back to 1948, I believe. Let me make sure I got the year right.
You're checking that, I think it's good to mention that abortions are actually up about 10% since Dobbs.
Is that right?
Yeah, and what they say is because the whole mail order thing, mm-hmm. Where you can get the day after pills, went nationwide, and basically, even Trump's DOJ said, hey, this is a state issue from now on.
Yeah, and this was the argument I always had.
So there's no federal enforcement.
To be intellectually honest about this, I always said, look, first of all, I don't agree with abortions. I have my own opinions on that based on logic, reason, and common sense, as well as some of my religious beliefs.
Right, right. All right.
But aside from that, this was a constitutional debacle. There was never written in the Constitution a right to go get an abortion.
No.
It was foolish. It made no sense. And I used to argue with even the most stringent, other academics and lawyers, and they would argue with me. And I'm like, listen, just because you get rid of the constitutional right doesn't mean you're going to get rid of abortions. It's going to go
right
back to the state level.
Yeah.
And I used to predict this. There'll probably be more abortions.
Yeah. There have been.
Because,
yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, turning back, so the Berlin blockade, Norm, 1948.
Oh,
we decided long ago after the war that we weren't going to go fight the Soviets. America didn't have the stomach for it, and I don't blame them.
Yeah.
We just chopped up Europe a little bit.
Yeah.
You take that, we'll take this. In fact, let's just cut Berlin in half.
Yeah, yeah. And create these zones where France, Britain, Russia, and the United States, the four allied powers, they chopped up Germany and they administered the affairs of their district, and they kind of did that with Berlin, and the three powers, the three non-Russian, created this West Berlin district, and the Russians were like, "Hey, it's a little all of Berlin was floating like an island in their administrative area," and they were like, "Well, we'll just take it. We'll deny." Yet we'll deny you a route to resupply the part of Berlin that you supposedly are administering. So we did this airlift that you're talking about.
Berlin airlift. Go read about it. It's really sort of fascinating.
Yeah.
But
we took casualties.
What dawned on me is this. With all this immigration and border and all this other crap, what you never see out of a free country is a wall that keeps people in.
That's right.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Right.
And that's what inevitably occurs in these types of communist countries.
That's
because
right.
People want to leave.
That's
they
right.
Don't want to stay there because right. It sucks.
Yeah.
And I remember as a kid watching a movie, I think Disney made it. It was about a family who was trapped in the East and they took a balloon ride over the wall.
Yeah.
And I remember maybe I must have been 12 years old going to visit the Berlin Wall. I mean, there were guards on the top with guns, not to keep us out, but to keep them in.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Now, we couldn't just storm it either, but they had the zone and everything else. I mean, it just crazy times.
And what you say goes back to antiquity. Hadrian's Wall, that the Romans built in England to keep the wild, Celts out of the Roman part of Britain, the Great Wall of China. You know, again, to keep the Mongols out.
Yeah, that was to keep the marauders out.
Exactly. But right. You know, it wasn't to keep their people in.
You could always leave. But the thing is, when you have a good free country like ours, people don't want to leave. No, with all the, your BS, you don't want to leave.
Suddenly, we're finding out, or the media is finding out with all these World Cup fans in America from Europe, that all this terrible perdition that they were reading about and hearing about on, like, the BBC and other foreign media, they come to America and they're like, this place rocks.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're even singing our national anthem in bars at night.
Yeah.
Like the Scottish fans after America beat Australia. We're singing our national anthem.
It's pretty incredible, isn't it?
I mean, it's blow me away. Yeah. It's like, yeah. So they kind of like, you know, once they experience things, they kind of like it. You know, they're like, you guys have a lot of freedom here. You could do what you want. You could, you know, you have so much material choices to make here, whether it's food or retail shopping. It's just unbelievable what your market economy has allowed you to have rather than a command economy.
Well, and what's fascinating, I've told this story probably on this show and lots of times in my real life. I represented some folks one time that were Armenians, but they came from old Soviet times.
Wow, yeah.
And they came here and they they started businesses, they did whatever. And the guy just looked at me and goes, you people are nuts.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want here.
Right.
What are you complaining about?
Exactly.
You can just go start a business.
Right.
Go do it.
Right.
Now, you can also fail. There's an analogy. Like, so you ever play chess?
Sure. Yeah.
So there's an old analogy. Like when the chess piece is in the middle of the board, say your queen's in the middle, it has the most impact because she can go all sorts of places.
Right.
She's in a corner. She can go. Like, we're in the middle of the board here, guys.
Yeah.
Like, you got the queen in the middle of the board. You can do whatever you want. Now, you can also go commit suicide. You can also decide to do nothing and stay there, and then somebody's pawn is going to take you.
Yeah.
With that freedom comes responsibility.
Yeah. So, you know, I was thinking about this. You brought up, something that happened on this date. And really, you know, not a signal kind of event occurred during the Revolutionary War period, but more debate on June 24th. About how to declare independence, whether to declare independence. This is within the Continental Congress.
Yep.
And they're considering this resolution by William Henry Lee, you know, curiously enough, Robert E. Lee's great-grandfather.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, who would himself lead a revolution against America of his own kind as a Confederate commander. But at any rate, I was thinking about the contradiction between the election results last night and what they were debating in the Continental Congress. And give me a minute here. So I'm thinking of what American revolutionaries were like 250 years ago. Okay. They were largely British educated. They were from British families. They were of the mercantile class, right? So they had a stake in, you know, Adam Smith economics, like, you know, work your ass off. You have an opportunity. If we get our freedom from the king, we'll have an opportunity, not for an equal outcome, but for an equal opportunity to succeed. Mm-hmm. Everybody in this country then will, you won't have these onerous taxes. You won't have impressment. You won't be forced to house British soldiers in your house. You won't, all of these things in our Bill of Rights and in our Constitution will be in play, is what they're envisioning on June 24th, 1776. As opposed to the revolutionaries today, like Mamdani has this, now he's a power broker and he's gotten all of these socialists and communists, they won their primaries last night. Mm. And what do they want? What is their revolution about? It's about disgorging from their fellow citizens largesse. It's about freebies. Well, we want free daycare. We want free buses. We want free college education. We don't even want criminal penalties for breaking the law, for shoplifting, or even to deport non-citizens for murder or rape. So I'm thinking about what 250 years ago a revolutionary was and what it is, what it means to Americans today. And it's so vastly, I feel like I'm on another planet.
It's 180 degrees opposite.
It's 180, yeah.
And when they say they want free, like, we just want free stuff. What they're really, that's really just another euphemism of saying, we want to take your stuff and give it to you.
Yeah.
Or this guy's stuff and give it to you.
Right.
And we're the ones, of course, that have the deciding, we're the ones that know best on who gets what.
Right, right.
Which
right.
is another euphemism to say, give us power.
Yeah.
Give us power.
Yeah.
Because we're going to decide. And then magically, at some point, 500 years in the future, all this will disappear and we'll live in this utopian dreamland that they've never, ever, 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 right. ever
yeah.
been able to achieve, because it's against human nature in every way, shape, or form.
And you talk to like your Armenian clients or your people from Poland or our First Lady, you know, who came from the oppressed Eastern European area when it was under Soviet rule, and they'll all say, you know, it doesn't work. Like, what are you people doing here? You have literally a utopian situation where you can dictate what you want to do for a living and how hard you want to work. If you want to be lazy, you can be lazy. If you want to work like Elon Musk and become the world's first trillionaire, you can do that too.
Well, and not only that, the consequences for doing that in our country right now, and really for the last maybe, I don't know, 50, 100 years, I don't know. But the consequences of doing nothing aren't that bad anymore.
No.
Right.
No.
So you can still, like, if you want to be lazy and you don't want to, and let's take lazy out of it. If you don't care what you have around you, in other words, you don't want the big house, you don't need the big house,
right.
you don't need all of this,
right.
you don't need the fancy car.
You want to subsist. You can do that.
You can do that. And you can do that by doing virtually nothing in this country.
Yeah.
And you'll still get an iPhone and a computer and access to TV and the internet.
We are at that point. Excuse me, Steve. I'm sorry. But I stepped on you there. But we are at that point now where the majority of the people are not paying any federal income tax. I mean, we have gone past that 50% line.
That is insane.
Which is just insane.
And these people are celebrating. I mean,
so no skin in the game, Steve.
It can't survive. So this is...
this is not long. This is not sustainable.
It's unsustainable is the right word.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And how it ends, I don't know. Whether it ends violently, whether it ends just, it dies on the vine sort of slowly, or whether something in the middle... It cannot sustain itself because, as Margaret Thatcher said, you run out of other people's money. And sooner or later, you're going to run out of other people's money. And
You mentioned violence. So that same group of people, the Democrats, Socialists of America, they have now started militias. Like, they actually have, like, they are talking about, you know, at any cost, at any price, by any means, they're using that kind of rhetoric that sounds a lot like, you know, Castro it sounds like, or Khrushchev or Stalin. It has that ring to it, like, you know, let's use the Second Amendment to stock up, not for the purposes of individual rights, but for the purposes of overthrowing if at some point the status quo, which will be our freedoms.
Their detractors, right?
So
they don't. I once said to somebody, I'm not going to mention who it was, but it was a text, and clearly we were on different ends of the polar planet. And I think it was about this. It was about when I think Amy Coney Barrett, in the middle of COVID, writes a decision that basically says you can't shut down the church or synagogue at the same time you're opening up the private stuff. You know, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't do that. Something like that.
Right, right.
And I rarely post anything. I posted something, and this guy reached out to me sort of in Facebook and said, well, that's interesting. Yeah, it makes sense. You're treating other people unfairly. And he was clearly a communist.
And
he was. But he was trying to get his head around what I was saying.
Yeah.
And I somehow led to this final statement. I said, yes, but I will always choose individual rights over a collective goal. You know, it's like, always, because individual rights lead to better for everybody.
Right.
Ultimately. So I always choose individual rights over collectivism, because it's collectivism that takes away individual rights.
Right.
And that's what these guys are doing. That they want to take your rights. And if they want guns, rest assured, they want to take yours.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
They're not saying we're all going to have guns and protect ourselves from the government. We're saying we're going to have guns so we can force what we want on you.
Yeah, they have the right think, to use Big Brother
talk. Because they know better.
So fitting right into that, Steve, is this, even though it seems like small beer, I think it illustrates your point, the point you just made about individual rights perfectly. So there is a long stream of Supreme Court decisions upholding the individual right to express or to hold your individual religious beliefs and political beliefs. And they had a gay pride night out in San Francisco with the San Francisco Giants. And at first, these pitchers, three of the San Francisco pitchers were wearing hats where they added a reference in the Bible to a particular line, like in Genesis or whatever. And they would scribble that. Three pitchers scribbled in white letters, very small. They didn't like cross out the gay logo, but they added their own Bible quote on their hat. And Major League Baseball and the Giants management came down on these guys and said, you know, you do that again, there'll be, you know, some enormous fine or, you know, you might be suspended. And then the Department of Justice opened an investigation into this, which is currently pending, based on these Supreme Court decisions. Like, famously, there was that Walmart case where the lady was wearing a crucifix and her manager said, you can't wear a crucifix at the register at a Walmart. You know, that's oppressing other people. And the Supreme Court upheld their right, her right to have a crucifix.
Yeah, it's an interesting. So I got to let's chop this up a little bit. You know, we have a First Amendment right that guarantees, among other things, the free exercise of our religion. All right. In other words, the government and almost like in conflict to that, we have an establishment clause. So the government can establish a religion and we have the right to free exercise of religion. So, you know, we have these things. But it does not prohibit, if you read the Constitution, nowhere would the Constitution say that I as an employer can't preclude you from wearing a cross when you sit at your desk or preclude you from praying five times a day or however many times a day facing
right.
America, you know.
Right.
It doesn't say it because I'm a private individual. Now, if there's a law, if the government passes a law that says you can't do that, that's a different thing because now you're impeding on the free exercise of religion. By government, I mean any government, whether it's the federal government, a state government, a city government, a local township government, or even, you know, the smallest of form of government you can have. If it's government action, you can't do it. So we're entering into this weird realm where the government is telling private companies what they can and can't do.
Yeah.
And this has always been the problem with the civil rights laws, the Title VII. You know, it's always been the issue because you're imposing upon private citizens what they can, how they run their businesses.
Right.
And I have always, I forget who the senator was. When all this stuff, when the civil rights, he goes, I prefer my freedoms like my coffee. I want it straight. You know. Or with my liquor, I want it straight, no mixers. You know, because it sometimes can lead you to these things you don't like. But at least it's free. And then the idea is the market would come. So if I say I'm not going to hire women because I don't like women, well, guess what? Or if you said that in your law firm and I say, well, that's interesting. Norm's next door to me. I'm going to hire all the women I want. I can because then I can get more business.
Right.
Yeah, that's the idea of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what makes the baseball thing more of a civil rights case is that they were compelled, they thought, to wear the gay pride hats.
Yeah.
Okay. So their employer was saying, hey, this political speech, or if you want to look at it, possibly a religious a tenet, we're going to impose upon you by you wearing this hat, your endorsement of gay pride. And whatever message that means and all of the attachments to that logo, you know, we're making you wear this hat. Major League Baseball, after the DOJ announced they were looking into civil rights violations, then backed up and said, well, wait a minute. The Giants did not they did not use the correct policy. The correct policy was and is that you are not required to wear special endorsement hats or t-shirts or logos, that the players actually had the right to just say, I want to wear the standard Giants hat. I don't want to wear the gay pride hat. I just want to wear the regular black and orange hat or whatever it is.
Yep.
But they were being told, Major League Baseball says the Giants failed to tell them they had that option. And so these players thought, well, if I'm going to be compelled to wear this, then I'm going to express how something yep. that I believe in. And so they were not basically against the gay pride event. They just wanted to say, okay, if I have to wear this, then I'm also going to say that.
Yeah, and just to be clear, the DOJ is acting under the Civil Rights Act,
That's
not
right.
the Constitution.
That's right.
Not the Constitution.
That's right.
And what they're basically saying is you can't compel certain religion, you can't compel certain...
That's right.
Now, and again,
because in a way, the Giants were compelling...
That's right.
An endorsement of a lifestyle. And maybe these guys, you know, I haven't interviewed the three pitchers. Maybe they would say, I don't care, you know, about what other people do. I just wanted to express myself. Or maybe they do have a problem with the lifestyle.
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, I understand what the law says, the Civil Rights Act says, and maybe DOJ has a point, but I'm not saying I agree with it.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not saying I agree with it because I do think on some level, the NBL should be able to say, look, you got to wear it or
you're fired. Know you're kind of saying that those civil rights laws themselves are really sort of out of order.
Yep.
They either went too far or they shouldn't exist in toto. And I understand the intellectual argument for that. Like, you know, if you're Woolworths back in the 1960s and you have no blacks served in the front window, well, you're an idiot because you're turning down business. And yep. I follow what you're saying because maybe the Waffle House next door says, we serve all.
Yeah.
They're going to get more business.
And I get it. There's an argument. This is an academic
argument. It's a public accommodation kind of.
This is an academic argument because, you know, on the one level, we did have some extreme problems in the country back in Jim Crow days. We had some extreme problems with segregation.
Sure.
And if the government wanted to get involved, they had to do it somehow. You know, perhaps a constitutional amendment or something might have been. But I just, as a purist, they're a little over their skis on it. And, well, look, but it's already been decided. It is what it is. I'm a lawyer. I appreciate it. The law is what it is.
Yeah.
And
it's pretty old now. I mean, it's been around.
It is now. It's been around. So at the end of the day, the MBL backed off.
They did.
They backed off. And I think they found a compromise.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have that... what do you call it, that antitrust exemption that Congress gave them? And I think they were looking at that and thinking, do we really want to doodle around with
this? This is it. If you make a deal with the government, you made a deal with the devil, right?
That's right.
So yeah.
You did some research into the Supreme Court case on the marijuana recreational user getting his gun rights back.
Yeah, sort of an interesting case. So this comes from a string of cases. It started with Heller. And going back, that says we have an individual constitutional right to bear arms. It's an individual right. And then as the Supreme Court addressed this issue, I think Bruin was the case that sort of says, look, here's how we're going to analyze Second Amendment issues. We're going to look at the history, text, and tradition of the constitutional amendment or of the Constitution and determine if a government regulation or government law violates it. In other words, it used to be a different standard called strict scrutiny for you legal geeks out there. It means that you really had a good reason. You had to have a good reason to violate somebody's constitutional rights. But now they've sort of changed a little bit. And they said, look, if conduct is permitted based on the history, text, and tradition of our country in our Constitution, well, then you can't pass a law that violates that or that prevents that. And that's sort of the backdrop for this case, which was United States versus Hemani. And basically, the first sentence is great, or the first paragraph is great. Gorsuch writes the opinion. Ali Hemani uses marijuana a few times a week. That fact alone, the government says, means he is automatically banned from possessing a firearm under federal law. And because Hemani admits he owns a gun, despite this ban, the government now seeks to prosecute him, imprison him for up to 15 years, and disarm him for life. This case poses the question whether the government's prosecution of Mr. Hemani is consistent with the Second Amendment. Like, I love Supreme Court, right? Like, when it's written well,
yeah.
It's like, I like to, if I taught legal writing in school or in law school, I would say, read this.
Yeah, that's very succinct.
It says it in like four sentences.
Right.
What it is.
Right.
No big words.
Yeah.
Just here's what it is.
Common people can read that and get it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Enter the Federal Gun Control Act in 18 U.S.C. section 1922 or 922G. It basically has this list of things that disarm people. And
yeah.
One's if you have a conviction, if you have committed domestic violence or, you know, and a conviction, by the way, is something that is a felony. So more than a year in prison, it would carry. And on that list is anyone who is an unlawful user of or addicted to a controlled substance. You're automatically banned from guns. Now,
yeah.
This, for those of you who are have any interest in the most famous case probably ever of somebody being sort of targeted for this, it would be Hunter Biden. And anybody who's bought a gun that has a little checkbox in those forms.
Right.
Right. One of them is, are you an unlawful user of marijuana or any other illegal drugs?
Yeah.
And the court basically says, limited to the facts here. So they're not saying anything yet broadly about other drugs, but limited to the marijuana user here. They're saying it's unconstitutional, that this is unconstitutional for the government to apply this law, to apply this restriction against Hamani's gun rights. And I love it.
Yeah. We still have this dichotomy. I guess Trump... the Department of Department of Health and Human Services, or whoever decides what schedule a particular drug is on, they have taken marijuana now off of that highest level threshold of drugs federally. Now they haven't legalized it like many of the states, or I should say most of the states.
Yep.
But so we still have this federal versus state inconsistency, let's put it that way, where some states say, hey, you know, it's just open season. It's state sanctioned and state licensed stores are selling this stuff
yep.
for recreational use,
yep.
including Ohio. And so, you know, you got to say like Trump has addressed the contradiction in part by taking it off the highest schedule, but it's still illegal federally.
Yeah, it's still illegal federally. And this is coming up. Well, look, I'll just give you, there's a case I'm working on. In fact, I have a hearing on it today.
I'll bet.
Where yeah. the police stop a car based solely on the odor of marijuana.
Okay.
They search the car.
Yeah.
So there's a rule that says if you stop a car, a police stop of motor vehicle is a significant intrusion that requires justification under the Fourth Amendment, reasonable suspicion. And they can search, the police can then search the interior compartment of the car, even closed containers, if they have something called probable cause. What's probable cause? I don't know, but they know it when you see it.
Yeah.
It means something more than enough to stop a car, but
yeah.
less than full, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So you have some basis to reasonably conclude that there is evidence of contraband in, say, the center console.
Yeah.
And in this case, they're using the odor of marijuana as the basis to develop probable cause to do the search or further the investigation. And our argument is, look, it's legal conduct under the Ohio Constitution.
Yeah.
The government's argument is going to be, the prosecutor's argument is going to be, yeah, but it's still illegal under the federal Constitution.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, well, look, how is that? So on the one hand, you are giving it. On the other hand, you're taking it away.
Yeah.
And you're punishing somebody for exercising their constitutional, Ohio constitutional right.
Right.
Or at least statutory rights.
Right.
But not, and even though it's in flux with, or in contradiction with the feds, that's a due process problem. So we're going to, like, this is coming up everywhere.
It's a mess.
It's a mess. It's yeah. coming up everywhere.
It's a mess. It needs to be resolved somehow. And at any rate, I think it's a good decision. And that's not coming from a pro pot, you know, like point of view. It's just that in the scale of offenses, recreational use of marijuana to me is no worse or, you know, than recreational use of alcohol.
In fact, it may be less worse.
It may be less worse.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that kind of medical research, now that it's off the schedule, I think we're going to learn a lot more about marijuana and what the downsides are and the possible upsides.
Well, look, it's a
drug. I guess we'll find out.
It's a drug.
It is a drug.
And it wouldn't surprise me if they being the studiers, the researchers,
yeah.
find something that is beneficial about the drug. It will also not surprise me if they find
exactly.
something that is not so good yeah. for you about the
yeah.
drug. I choose not to use it.
Yeah. You know, like the wine producers like to yeah. say, oh, a glass of red wine, will, you know, actually help your health.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
You know.
Yeah. But no wine is still better for your health, right?
And even tobacco, years ago, they would have like a doctor on TV saying, you know, I use filtered Pall Malls and they're great. And they actually maybe keep colds away.
Yeah.
You know, they... Yeah. Is, you know, so all of this, we'll find out in due course. But I think, yeah, taking away somebody's constitutional rights. I mean, what's next? The guy can't vote? I mean, what else are you going to take away from him? So
right.
I'm glad for that decision, even though I have my reservations about marijuana use. I thought we'd bring up, maybe do a deeper dive than we've done in past shows about data centers in Ohio. And the reason is the news hook is this week it came out that the people who wanted to put a ban on the ballot this fall on data centers put a statewide moratorium on new data centers that haven't broken ground yet failed to get enough signatures to put it on the ballot. They're still going to collect them. I'm sure it's going to be on the ballot at some point.
Yep.
But there's also, at the same time, you got Governor DeWine's study group, and you've got various pieces of legislation cooking in the General Assembly. And one of the House bills is kind of an omnibus of different ideas. And it has bipartisan support for lots of pieces of it. And the Buckeye Institute, whom we've had on the show, gave testimony. And I think, and they're largely a conservative think tank. And it shows to me that conservatives, if you will, Republicans, are starting to grasp that not only are there some injustices going on out there and some skullduggery by developers, but there's also a political battle happening out there in really bright red MAGA land. Mm-hmm. And I think they're starting to come to grips, even if Vivek and Amy, you know, the two candidates for Acton for governor, even if they aren't really on board yet, I think it's good. So the Buckeye Institute said that four big things. We should restrict NDAs as a tool to keep the public ignorant of pending data centers being planned.
Yeah, that, well, that anybody, these, like, what's the, what would like the counter argument be to that?
So the data center people, like Google or whoever it would be that's building one, or Meta, they would say, well, our competition then will know that we're planning one in New Albany or Baltimore, Ohio, or some other place in Ohio. They'll know what our plans are. So we're not really trying to, their argument is, of course, it's BS. Their argument is, we're not trying to keep it from the public. We're trying to keep it from our competitors. But mayors, township trustees, county commissioners, all kinds of their employees are signing these NDAs, or at least acting as if one is in place voluntarily, as they try to, you know, get the ball across the goal line of getting these centers built because they think it's a boon to their area, or maybe they have a conflict of interest. They have some land to sell. So one of the Buckeye proposals is to restrict NDAs. The other one is to, sadly, they want to keep the sales tax exemption, which has cost Ohio $1.6 billion so far, that John Kasich put into place by governor, by fiat. Like, he didn't even pass legislation. He, as the governor, apparently has some emergency power, and this has been now through the DeWine administration as well. And people, including the legislators, are just now finding out, in many cases, mm-hmm. that this exemption existed. I mean, it's kind of been like under the table. So when you think of Jobs Ohio and you think about all the other giveaways, the tax deferments, you know, the free roads, the infrastructure, the water use, the annexations, all the other tools that these data center developers have gotten. In addition, they've gotten a secret sales tax exemption on every piece of steel, every piece of drywall, every turbine, every piece of copper wire that's
I
have to pay sales tax on that.
And what's the
just build a house.
What's the benefit for Ohio? Like, why do that?
It's bizarre. It really is bizarre. I'm sure it made us more competitive, you know, versus other states. But we're finding out the benefits of having these data centers are, you know, sucking up energy, sucking up water, pissing off homeowners that live next to these things that have to listen to the thing humming all night, and light pollution, and, you know, the trucks and the beating up the roads. So one of the other things is they don't want eminent domain. So another Buckeye thing, no eminent domain used to grab land or to grab new roadways.
Yeah, so eminent domain.
For data centers.
Yeah, eminent domain, for those who don't know, it's actually a constitutional provision. But basically it says that every now and then the government, for a good reason, can go take your land.
Even for private development, we know from who's the Supreme Court justice that resigned and then... And then a developer did it to his land.
Yeah.
And he wrote the decision.
He wrote the decision. Yeah.
Saying the skinny guy, I can't forget his name, but he wrote that crazy decision that said the government doesn't have to take your land just for the government to use. They could take your land away and then give it to, I don't know, the Trump organization or a data center or somebody to develop.
David
Suter. Yeah. Which was beautiful because he got hoisted by his own petard in that case.
Well, it says he never actually lost his land, but he was famously targeted for the property seizure by angry activists in retaliation for his 2005 decision in Kelo versus City of New London. You know,
yeah.
Eminent domain is one of those things. It's like you sort of you can tolerate it because you can understand why it might be necessary sometimes.
Right.
We want high.
Right.
But they have to pay. The government has to pay you for the value for the land.
Yeah.
You can't just steal it and give it to somebody else like Mondami would do.
Yeah. Right.
Or regulate you out of existence and then say, well, since you can't meet our regulations, we'll just take it.
Right.
It's not that.
Yeah. The last thing Buckeye said, and I agree with this, is they want to restrict the abatements on property taxes for these data centers. Because that truly is outrageous.
Yeah, look, if I'm paying tax, they should pay tax. This is the stuff that always pisses me off.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Right.
It happens. So the argument would be, Norm, or what say you to this? I mean, if other states, if this is a, take data centers out of it.
Yeah.
Like, I know Ocasio-Cortez famously sort of shunned, was it Amazon?
Yeah, right.
In her district.
It was something like 7,000 jobs, or it was a huge number of jobs.
Yeah, not only
in Brooklyn, where they need the job.
Where they need the jobs.
Yeah.
So I get it. There's sometimes good reason to give some incentives for big business to come in. But on the other hand, if nobody gave incentives, it would all be an equal playing field. So, you know, it's sort of like.
Right.
It's like leveling the playing fields on recruiting in college football,
right,
or NFL, how much you can pay people.
Like this NIL thing. It's almost like you need a national policy because otherwise it's a big mess.
It's a runaway.
You got Indiana and Kentucky and Ohio all vying for, say, the same automotive plant, and they're fumbling over each other to give away everything.
So look, but event, you know, if we're going to stay true to our values here, let the market fix it at some point.
Right.
In Ohio, if Ohio doesn't want to compete in this level, then Ohio's going to fall behind, and eventually they're going to have to say, "All right, we're going to play the game too."
But the other way to keep the market right is to keep the playing field level.
But that would require federal legislation.
Yes, it would.
Yeah,
right.
It would require federal legislation.
So my additions to this data center thing would be, and I'm sure you have some ideas, Steve, but mine. Is that I think in addition to NDAs, I think there needs to be a positive requirement requiring local officials to announce on social media whenever a developer or whenever a a proposal is before them that not only can't they sign an NDA, but that they have a positive duty to inform the public that there's some scuttlebutt, that there's inquiries being made as to factories. And I'm not going to talk about apartment buildings and stuff like that. I'm going to stick with heavy industry because that's what these data centers really are. Mm-hmm. They're making a product, and there is heavy industry byproducts from that, just like a steel foundry, just like an automotive assembly plant, just like a coal-fired power plant. When you have something of that scale, a feedlot with fecal lakes, you know, when you have something of that size moving into a community, your local officials should have a positive duty to report that.
Well, and I think if it's not already obvious, then it should be made even more obvious that whatever interest the people on whatever local zoning board have in this development, meaning if the data center is buying your land.
Exactly. Or your uncle's.
Or your uncle's land.
Yeah.
Or somebody, there has to be some transparency. Because otherwise, it just, even if it's not corrupt, it certainly looks like it is.
Right. And there's many things in our ethics laws that talk about avoiding even the appearance of a conflict.
Yep.
Not just real conflict, but even the appearance. And as an attorney, you have that duty, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that is a duty that the Ohio Ethics Commission really has not imposed on local officials near enough.
And the easiest way as a lawyer to avoid even the appearance of some sort of impropriety is truth, is transparency.
That's right.
Is just tell my clients what's
going
on.
That's right. So when I used to represent the school treasurers as a lobbyist, there was a requirement that they disgorge other businesses that they own, that they have to report that. And I explained it this way, even though I had reservations about the privacy concerns, because now it's a public record. And what business really is it of somebody to know that, let's say, some local school treasurer owns a pizza parlor, you know, or, you know, where he's partners in a pizza parlor. And I explained it this way. Well, if your school orders 200 pizzas, right, for a graduation event, and it comes out later that you, the treasurer, more or less paid your own pizza parlor to supply, you know, like that's not going to look good for you. This way you've disclosed it.
Yeah.
Like you said, the truth.
Put it out for a bit.
Put it out. Yep. Exactly. I think Jobs Ohio needs to be audited and possibly that whole funding mechanism with where they get their budget from the Department of Liquor Control, all of that needs to go away. I think Jobs Ohio needs to be a state agency run like any other state agency with a director and employees of the state and be fully, again, transparent and audited.
Yep.
I think that the data centers need to pay for their own energy needs without any impact on the homeowners. I think the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio has been just, all they've been is reactive. Oh, so they look at the energy requirements and they go, oh, I see. Duke Energy is saying that they have twice the demand, so we're going to let them raise their rates by a factor of two. You know, like, well, no, you should be telling the people who want to be hooked up to the grid that aren't on the grid yet, sorry, we don't have enough capacity for you. You're going to have to figure out another way, but we can't make grandma's electrical bill double overnight because you want to supply computing power to Meta back in the Silicon Valley. That's not right.
There's always, like, everybody, the mistake people make here is that they attribute, like, they only look at what the good can happen.
Yeah.
Like they never look at the, like, what are the consequences? What are the actual aftershocks of this?
And yeah.
There are tons of them.
There's tons of these.
Yeah.
And my final one, Steve, and I think you will like this. I think we've talked about this before. So Ohio, as a former and, well, still current industrial state, right? We have these brown sites all over the state that are already, if you will, compromised. I mean, they need, you know, EPA, they need it before you would, let's say, grow corn on them or have cattle graze on these brown sites, you'd have to get the pollution out of the ground.
Yeah. So you're talking about brownfields, like, and what happens is there's the EPA gets involved at the state and actually, I think at the federal level.
Yeah.
Too. They have to come out and sort of give you the
because the owners have walked away in many cases.
Yeah, so it's like an old gas station.
Yeah,
it has underground storage tanks,
and they're just like, "Hey, you can have it. I give up."
And believe it or not, there's something called BUSTR, Bureau of Underground Storage Tank Removal.
Yes.
Agency that goes in and they get it cleaned up, and you know some of the worst are old dry cleaning sites.
Wow. Yeah, I can only imagine.
Old dry. If you happen to live near an old dry cleaning site,
yeah, get out. That's why the Mad Hatter went mad because of the chemicals. Yeah. In dry cleaning.
Yeah, dry cleaning. And I think also another bad one, I mean, aside from pesticides, but like, parking lots are terrible.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Notorious, but pesticides, dry cleaning sites, and hair places.
So I've never understood this.
Salons.
Why like the Columbus Chamber of Commerce and, you know, all the rah-rah groups in Columbus were so thrilled, for example, when Intel said, well, we're going to go out to a green field where Biden said it's just empty space. We're going to go out to...
nobody cares about your farm.
Yeah, we're going to go out to a green field that's currently growing, you know, corn, soybeans or whatever. And we're going to stick our chip factory out there when there's brownfield sites all over Columbus and you're just like... Well, that would be in the Columbus School District, which could certainly use a tax base. And there's a lot of need for jobs within Columbus. And you're just thinking, why didn't they shop this around? Because it's still near the airport. There's still plenty of water, you know.
So why didn't they?
I don't know why they didn't.
Like, why not?
Why not?
Because they don't want to bring their executives in to live in those places.
Okay.
That's the only thing I can think. Look, we're going to go out to this place where it's beautiful. There's countryside. We can build our own little cities out here. We can have fancy suburban neighborhoods out here. Look at this quaint little old historic downtown area, Norm, with cool little diners and restaurants. And we're going to gentrify all this and make it, we're going to modernize all this and make it look like New Albany. And by the way,
the permit
deal with the owners of that land, and they're going to make millions.
Well, the permitting and the regulatory side by these rather unsophisticated rural townships, they can steamroll them.
And not only that, the government's created the insanity that it would take to develop something like that in the city. So
that's
what
do?
They avoid it by going somewhere else where they didn't create.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And you see that with the rebuilding of, what is it? Something like 3,000 homes or whatever it is in L.A.
In L.A., right? They can't rebuild.
Yeah, because the cities in most cases trip over their own you-know-whats because they've made it so complex for people to build.
Yeah.
Even a home.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. You're right. A data center in
Columbus. They have to come in and meet all the Columbus regulations, pay all the Columbus taxes, do all the Columbus stuff. And then, by the way, they have to have their wealthy executives coming into a part of town that is undesirable.
Well, you know, they'd live in Bexley or something.
They don't want to do that.
Well, some other news, Steve. I think this is good, too. The Cleveland Clinic has settled a legal case with several claimants to provide detransitioning counseling for those that they transitioned who are now saying, hey, you know, you horribly mutilated me. And you did it when I was a child. It
makes me cringe.
And, you know, I think it is positive that lawyers, doctors, the Cleveland Clinic itself, that they got together and they came up with some sort of compensation and plan to assist those kinds of people.
Yeah, but ultimately, you know,
it shouldn't have happened.
You know who's paying for this? We are.
Well, yeah.
We are.
Sure.
Because these lunatics created all this stupid policy and engaged in all these stupid practices. Now they're going to have to settle billion-dollar lawsuits. And it's not there. It's insurance money, right? So the insurance companies are going to pay. And guess who they're passing that cost off to? So this is all of us are paying the price for this lunacy.
So I'm going to throw.
I love it that lawyers are making money.
I'm going to throw a couple of legal things at you here happening in Ohio, and these are philosophical things. What do you think, Steve? I know you are highly suspicious, if not against, the death penalty because it's imperfect. And it's one of those things that when it's final and the guy's put to death or the woman's put to death, well, you can't bring them back if it's later found out that the evidence was tainted or they got poor representation. But Governor DeWine wants to eliminate, it's come out now, he wants to formally, and I guess it would be by legislation, but he wants to go through some kind of process where Ohio will forbear and formally get rid of the death penalty.
Yeah,
as an option.
I'm a walking contradiction on this.
I know you are.
Because on the one hand, I agree in theory with the death penalty. You know, I mean, I think there as our good friend Paul Scarsella, who's been on our show before, and he's probably prosecuted more death penalty cases when he was worked for the Ohio Attorney General's office than anybody I've ever met. He just says, look, some people need killing. And he says it sort of jokingly, because really what he's saying is he when he says it that way, he is pointing out that the standard for when you impose a death penalty is, I don't want to say a farce, but you know it when you know it.
Yeah.
But you can't quantify it.
Yeah.
Sort of like pornography, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the problem with the standard is that, I mean, first of all, assume you get all the, you're only getting the people who are actually guilty, which I think is an assumption, that's a bridge too far, because it does happen that people have been executed that were innocent.
Yeah, it has happened.
And then you've got to decide, the harder question then is who gets to live and who gets to die, and then how do you standardize that across Ohio with different jury pools and different people and different this.
And let's just stipulate, there is no way to do that.
There's no way to do that. Right?
There's no way to do that.
And the implementation of it then is very difficult. And then, you know, it costs a lot of money. There's a lot of but really, I think this is a lot of ado. I don't want to say about nothing, but I have seen in the last 20 years, I've been practicing 31 years now, doing criminal defense work. I haven't seen a death penalty case in Franklin County in the last 15 years, I don't think. And I think they're fewer and fewer and fewer in number, because it's just not, for all the reasons we're talking about, and juries are not imposing the death penalty in many cases. And the ones they are, some people need killing, I guess, is what the other side would say.
Yeah.
So look, I'm a walking contradiction. What's DeWine got to do with it? Well, he's the governor, I guess. So DeWine doesn't get to just say no death penalty in Ohio.
Right.
He's imploring the General Assembly, our legislative body in Ohio, to abolish it. And they have every right to abolish it if that's what they want to do.
Okay. I'll throw another one at you. I didn't actually know this until I went to my class reunion, my high school class reunion. And I reunited with a friend of mine, a classmate who's on the Ohio Supreme Court, Pat Fisher. And Pat told me, I don't know how I missed this, Steve, but I thought the term limits in Ohio for public officials were for legislative and administrative offices. I don't know how this got by me. It shows you how you just can't know everything. The Supreme Court is also term limited. And that blows me away, really, because we don't have that on a federal level at all.
Yeah, federal life appointments.
And, of course, they don't run for office.
No, they're appointed.
They're appointed and approved.
In Ohio, they're elected.
They're elected in Ohio, and they can only serve two terms.
Yeah.
That did not compute.
I think I did know that, but I've never really given it much thought.
Yeah.
And
well, I think he's a hell of a jurist, and it's not because he's a friend of mine. But I hate to lose that talent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's terrible that
term limits are it's one of those debates, right? There's pros and cons of all that stuff.
Man, you get a good Supreme Court justice, and Pat has not ruled. You know, it's not like my agenda is the same as his. He's ruled for against just as an example. He's ruled against some of the redistricting proposals by the Republican Party, mm-hmm. and he's a Republican.
Yep.
So he's been part of that majority that turned down two or three maps.
Well, this is what I like to say. You know,
he's a good guy.
And if you follow even the U.S. Supreme Court, politics and the law are not the same.
Yeah.
Just because you got appointed by a Republican or just
That's
because
right.
you identify with the Republican Party, just because you got elected. Once you, like the law, like I've, like you've seen me here.
You are correct on this.
Sort of weave around.
Oh, yeah.
It's like we talked about the Civil Rights Act, right?
Yeah.
So look, it's the law. And political, you may disagree with it, but
right.
it's the law, so
right.
you have to follow it.
Yeah.
And you know, as lawyers, we are hopefully trained maybe not if you're not. This is what people hate about lawyers, because we're trained to look at it both ways. I mean, yeah. I can just sort of say, all right, I get this, but over here is this. And you and I have gone at it on this kind of stuff.
Sure, yeah.
Because I just sort of have to look at it like, look, here's the trade-off. Here's what it is. We have no choice. We got to follow along.
Yeah. I, you know, you're denying the public the right to reelect somebody that the public otherwise would reelect. I guess in the case of Supreme Court justices, I guess that would be my one exception, because I think 8 years might not be enough. Like two 4-year terms. I think
I agree with you.
Somebody gets some gravitas at a certain point. And I'll just tell you, Pat left a major law firm. He took such a haircut to become a Supreme Court justice that it is, I know people won't believe this, but it really is, to people like him, a service to society. He gave up a huge legal practice at a law firm to become a justice. And now he'll go back to that, and God bless him. But I can tell you this, if we didn't have term limits, I think he'd run a third time, but he's done in 2 years.
Yep.
So I just thought I'd throw that out, because I wasn't aware of that. And it just shows you that, you know.
All right, so just so you know, states with initial elections, 22 states have initial elections for their Supreme Court judges. Partisan elections are 8 states. Nonpartisan are 14.
Hmm.
States with appointed, Ohio's one nonpartisan. So, you know, it's not a Republican versus Democrat.
Yeah.
States with appointive system, 16 states. Appointed by the governor, there are 14 states appointed by the legislature, 2 more. Retention election states.
It's all over the map.
They combine the two. 18 states, you're initially appointed to the bench, either by the governor or the General Assembly. But then if you want to keep your job, you got to go get a retention election. So all sorts of different ways.
Yeah, it's also, final thing, Ohio related. This UFC, you know, the big fight on the White House lawn that by all reports was a huge success. I didn't watch it. I'm not a wrestling guy, but I'm told that the meets or that the contests were thrilling and lots of upsets, and it was a very high quality event. A local Danville, Ohio, that's out in Knox County, young guy, he took the $3,000 he got for graduating from high school. And his mother noticed he was buying body armor and guns, and that he was communicating with people that she didn't know, and that he was acting strange. So she reported it, I guess, to the Danville police or the Knox County Sheriff, and they in turn got hold of the FBI. And they uncovered something like, is it 13, 14 people?
And growing, right.
That had this... None of them were in D.C. They didn't follow through, but they were putting together some concepts to assassinate people, to kill them at this event. And we'll never know if they maybe would have done something later on or how far they got. But at any rate, the two amazing things about this is that this was interstate in scope, so it's clearly within the FBI's purview. It's not something that just happened in Ohio. This guy had accomplices or schemers that were in on it in California. I think one of them was a non-U.S. citizen, a Mexican citizen. So we'll see. But the other amazing thing to me is just the idea of a parent turning in their son, reporting on their son. I think the mother is a hero in this case.
It's got to be one of the hardest things she's ever done.
It's got to
be.
I mean, you know, because Steve, you've been there in sentencing when a mother comes in and she's bawling and asking the judge for mercy for a son who maybe, did something terrible.
What she did here was the ultimate act of motherhood. I mean, it really... I could drill down on this.
You see this, man.
I mean, look, so you have the ultimate act of parenting. You and I have talked about this, is not protecting your kids.
Yeah.
But the opposite, you know, offering only the boundaries necessary for them to move forward and grow on their own. And, you know, I've had to watch my kids fall down the stairs metaphorically many times.
Yeah.
And cringe. Yeah. Because I knew that I could have stopped them, or I could have helped them, or right. I could have done it for them.
Right.
This is true. I was in a meeting one time with one of my sons at their parents and over the school, and they were like, "Well, you know, your son may not pass the whatever grade and whatever." I said, "Okay, flunk him."
Yeah.
And they looked at me like I was crazy.
Yeah.
And I said, "I'm serious, guys.
Yeah.
Look, it's fifth grade.
Yeah.
Who cares?
I believe in object lessons.
What's he going to learn?
You know, to help mold a child. You know, object lessons are good.
Yeah.
You know, my son Paul at one time, I love this story, but he came home from grade school and he obviously had heard about something called children's services, right? So I punished him for something. Now none of my punishments were physical in nature, but you know, it like you can't use a computer for a week or whatever it was. And he wailed and went, he stomped around the house and he said, "I'm going to call children's services." And I got out a quarter.
So here you go.
Please, please call children's services. Yeah. Nothing would please me more than to hear you come back after a week of eating hot dogs and baked beans about how miserable
right.
it
it's
was.
Some group home.
Yeah.
Right.
Some...
All right.
Winners and losers?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So the Senate, with four Republican, I don't know, I don't want to call them traitors, what would it be, outliers, passed this War Powers referendum, which really has no effect on the Iran, U.S.-Iran war, because we're currently in a ceasefire. There's this memo of understanding that may or may not lead to a treaty, but at any rate, Senators Cassidy, who Trump, you know, famously endorsed his opponent, and he's gonna lose office. Ron Paul, you know, libertarian, who's just against any kind of executive power. Susan Collins, who's running against this Nazi guy, and then Lisa Murkowski, who's just she's the biggest rhino in the Senate. So they all voted to take away, in theory, Trump's power after this stipulated period of time in the War Powers Act. I think it's 60 days.
Yep.
They voted with the Democrats to take away his right to prosecute the war in Iran, which most scholars say, well, now that we've had a ceasefire, the clock will start again.
It's a new set of downs.
It's right? A new 60-day period if it ever goes back. So, but to me, it's upsetting that you would do that, because all it does is give Iran this idea that, hey, yeah. Trump is losing the support of not only the Congress, but the American people. My winner would be John Fetterman, who voted against the War Powers Act, because he has said many times, for 47 years, everybody said they can't have a nuke. Trump actually takes action to wipe out, at least for the next 20 years, their nuclear program. And so, no, he did the right thing. Maybe gas prices are higher in the short term, but that's a small price to pay to take a nuclear power off the table.
Interesting. And I wonder if this latest peace deal or the truce is so he gets a new set of downs. Maybe Trump really is playing three-dimensional chess.
Yeah, a lot of people think he is doing a rope-a-dope thing. Let's get through the midterms. Mm-hmm. Let's just if Iran wants to string this out, I'll rope-a-dope with them.
Yep.
And then after the midterms, if I still have a Republican House and a Senate,
right, rock and roll.
We're rocking and rolling.
All right, my good and bad.
Yes, sir.
We'll start with the bad. People who hate the country just because they don't like the president. People who are metaphorically pissing in the Lincoln pool, a reflection pond.
The reflection.
It's like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Come
on.
It's still a country, right? So yeah. Like, if Biden would have done this, would you have had the same reaction? The answer is no.
Well, and in fact, Obama did spend $14 million to try to clean up the reflecting pool.
Right.
And Trump spent just about the same amount. But it's a crime when he does it.
Yeah, it's just so insane. So that's my loser. All you people are losers, right? Look, I get it. Don't vote for the man. I could care less who you vote for. I mean, I care who runs the country, but I don't hate the country because when the people that I didn't vote for are in charge of the country, guess what? I still love the country.
Exactly.
Which brings me to the good.
Exactly.
Robert Van Winkle, a.k.a. Vanilla Ice.
Yeah.
Ice Baby.
Yeah.
You win this week, my friend. You win because what's he say? He performed at the I Love the 90s portion of the celebration.
Yeah.
And he basically just said, his quote, shut up and play.
Yeah.
Just shut up and play. I'll play for Putin if that's what you want. I'm playing my music, man. We're going to have fun. We're going to celebrate the country.
Agreed.
That's exactly what should have happened.
Agreed.
And these artists who think that because they can play an instrument, they can play some music, they can act on TV or on the stage, I think you have God-given talent that is remarkable. But that doesn't mean that you understand politics any better than the rest of
right,
us.
Right, right.
And I don't need to hear your opinions on it. I could give a rat's ass about your opinion.
Right,
and unless I ask for it.
Right. A good example of how the country has changed would be, like, when you look at presidents who were controversial, like Lyndon Baines Johnson or Richard M. Nixon, you would have people who were clearly on the other side of the political spectrum, like Diana Ross or Stevie Wonder. They would go and perform at the White House. Mm-hmm. And they weren't there to say, Nixon's my guy.
They were there to say, we love the country.
And I respect the office of the president. Mm-hmm. The president's asked me to perform, and I'm not going to do it for him. I'm going to do it for the office and for the country.
As they say in the military, salute the man, or salute the rank, not the man.
And I'm not going to, you know, Aretha Franklin, you know, these kinds of people who were great musicians would just go and do their art, and they weren't using the occasion to chastise the president.
So stupid. All right. Well, look, that's your weekly dose of common sense, at least for now. We are coming at you right from the middle. Until next week.